Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and we are back for part two, the afterbirth interview with Organic Florist Marissa. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
You had your baby.
I had my baby.
Congratulations.
Yay.
You look wickedly different.
Yes, it's a bit different, isn't it?
Yeah. I lost a pound since I saw you last.
Yeah, me too.
But I need to do your diet plan. I either need to get have a baby or get food poisoning or something.
No, that doesn't sound like fun at all.
Or I could just eat healthy and exercise and get enough sleep.
Yeah, that'll do it.
That might be the way to go.
Probably.
Last time we talked, you were very close to your due date. Mm-hmm. And you were planning to do a hotel VBAC, which I had never really seen before. Mm-hmm. And lots of people in my world labor in a hotel and then plan to go to the hospital to deliver. But you were planning to do a hotel VBAC, labor, and birth. And it's because it was a VBAC because your first baby was in a breech presentation and you had a cesarean birth.
Right.
How did the rest of your pregnancy go?
Well, the rest of the pregnancy, after the podcast, it pretty much just looked like pre-labor all the time. I had Braxton Hicks really rhythmically for a lot of weeks.
And were they painful?
No.
Okay, you just felt contractile activity happening.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of activity. And then as we got closer at the 37-week, 38-week, 39-week mark, sometimes they would be stronger. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they would come together, every 15 minutes for a couple hours, and then they'd kind of disappear. And that's enough to drive a woman mad, especially somebody who knows that birth is very unpredictable and who wanted to plan and really work hard through this whole pregnancy to plan for all the variables that can come up so that when you get surprised or get kind of thrown off your game, that you can cope with that. That was my coping mechanism was, hey, I'm a little bit afraid of that. I'm going to go see my therapist, or I'm going to come up with a plan on how to achieve or get around whatever.
But to plan for all the variables, you sort of have to have a tax code of a birth plan.
Right.
Section 402B.
Which is impossible.
It's impossible.
It is impossible.
But you're a planner. Planning makes you feel
safe.
More safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you did have a lot of elements to your birth plan.
I sure did. I had an A, B, C, D plan, really. I had the A plan with my midwife in the hotel and the B plan with the OB at the hospital across the street. And then I had a C plan for when he was out of town. With
another OB at a different hospital.
At a different hospital. And then I had a D plan, which I actually enacted at 40 weeks. I crossed that 40-week threshold and I started getting really anxious about going to 42 and not going into labor. And
right when you crossed 40?
Right when I crossed 40, I got nervous about it. Mm-hmm.
Did somebody say something that made you nervous?
No, I was acutely aware of the fact that my midwife wouldn't be able to deliver me at home.
After 42.
After 42.
So you still were 2 weeks away.
I was still 2 weeks away, but what if? And suddenly the what if started creeping up, and I recognized that tension.
That's a California law, by the way.
Right.
That the scope of practice for midwifery
right.
for home birth is 37 to 42 weeks.
Right. And so, and then knowing that it was likely that my OB wouldn't want me to go over as well, mm-hmm. I started feeling the pressure of that. And that pressure wasn't how I wanted this experience to be. I really wanted this experience to be pleasant and different than the feelings I had over my last one.
And you were still working towards the end. Not past 40. Were you working past 40?
Not past 40, no.
But towards the end, you were still
towards
doing
the end,
a big
I was,
project.
I was building a 20-foot live garden wall.
Right. Just a little
project.
Wall of garden.
Yeah. Yeah. So I found an OB that would deliver me past 42. That was my plan D.
That was plan D.
Yep. Just in case.
So at 40 weeks, you went for the...
I went and met another OB.
Add on to your birth plan D just in case.
Yep. D just in case. And then I could relax.
And plan D OB was okay with just being the backup in case you go past 42 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty neat.
I had a bunch of really special people I met through this pregnancy. Yeah. So, we hit 40 weeks and a half and I did a cervical sweep with my midwife. And then
what does that mean?
A cervical sweep?
No, just for the audience.
Oh, right. Right. My understanding is where They manually go up and with a finger kind of break the tissue between the bag of waters and the cervix.
Okay. So it's sort of like almost like an aggressive pelvic exam, vaginal exam.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not comfortable, but I definitely, you know, I had a very big baby mm-hmm. and I was feeling anxious and we kind of wanted to get this show on the road.
Was your baby measuring big on ultrasounds or your mm-hmm. midwife felt like the baby was big on
yes.
palpation?
Both of the above. Both of the above.
Okay.
I stopped doing ultrasounds because I just didn't want to know any more of the, oh my gosh, your baby's huge,
mm-hmm.
Because I didn't want it to scare me.
People still tell that to my mother.
Yeah, really?
About me. Yeah. It never gets old.
So at 41 weeks exactly, I had a really yo-yo of a day. I had been having really consistent contractions and then they'd fall off and nothing was very painful. Nothing was kept going. I kept doing, every time I do a chore or focus on something that I needed to get done, the contractions would go away.
Was anybody checking your cervix?
No.
Okay.
But when we did the cervical sweep, I was 2 centimeters and 50% effaced.
Oh, okay. Did that feel good to you?
I'd never been dilated before, so every little bit counts.
It was exciting then.
Yeah, it was exciting.
You're happy to hear that. Better than nothing. Dilated at all or
yeah.
1 centimeter. The cervix was 2 centimeters full.
Mm-hmm.
Only 8 to go.
That's right.
So, and when was that?
That was at 40 weeks and a half. I was 2 centimeters.
And then 41 weeks, a few days later, was your yo-yo.
It was the yo-yo day.
Did you have more contractions after the sweep?
Yeah, I had some contractions and some cramping, but nothing that really just got consistent enough to keep going.
Okay.
I felt like I was never going to go into labor.
Did every day feel more pressuresome for you?
It did.
Getting closer to that 42-week
yeah.
deadline.
Yeah, because you know, you build this team that then has to shift at 42. It just...
And even though you had a 25-page birth plan, you liked page one.
I liked page one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really wanted that hotel feedback. So we had this yo-yo of a day, and you know, I made dinner. The contractions stopped. We watched a Joe Coy comedy show. The contractions picked up again.
I love comedy in labor for the right
person
at the right time.
Yeah, and then you know, I put my 3-year-old to bed, and the contractions stopped again.
Oh boy!
And I just got mad. I got furious. And I was mad at everybody who lived in my house. I was mad. I went outside the house and I called my midwife and I vented. And she told me that I could say whatever I wanted to anybody, but maybe I should just get a good night's sleep.
I would not want to be on the other side of Mad Marissa.
Yeah, it's a pretty special looking thing.
Well, I mean, you strike me as a passionate person, somebody who feels emotions big. So mm-hmm. when you're happy, very happy. When
yeah.
you're grateful, very grateful. When you're mad, uh-oh.
Yep. It's true. And so I took most of her advice. I didn't yell at anybody but my husband.
Okay. We're
yeah.
usually the ones who get
yeah.
it.
So I went inside and I gave him a good talking to about, I don't even know what. I was just ticked. And then
you feel better afterwards?
Yep. And then I went into my bedroom to get ready to go to bed, just like my midwife told me to. And he, while I was doing that, called my midwife and said, you know, based on Marissa's attitude, I think we're going to go into labor tonight.
Oh, wow. Just because you let him have it?
Yeah, just something. He just sensed it. He just knew from the way I was acting that it just felt like it was way different than it had been the night before.
But he didn't tell you that.
He didn't.
He called your midwife.
Mm-hmm. Just to give her the heads up.
Okay.
And so while I was getting ready for bed, that's when the contractions started.
This is
41 weeks on the dot.
On the dot, okay.
Yep. And, you know, I've heard a lot of birth stories where, you know, oh, my contractions started and I made a sandwich, I went for a walk, and it was really, you know, just slow starting. And this was not what it was like for me.
How was it for you?
It was like a freight train.
Oh, really?
They hit hard and fast, and I was, you know, suddenly between 4 and 5 minutes apart, and...
What time was that?
About 8:30 p.m.
Okay.
And
Toddler's asleep.
I came out of the room and looked at my husband. I was like, I think this is it. He said, yeah, I know. I've already called our hotel
plan, really?
But they don't have any room for us.
Really?
So they were all booked up. So our first enactment of a plan B,
uh-huh.
right? So we called our Plan B hotel and got a room there, got all our stuff and got gone, got to the hotel, got into the room, and I started trying all the birth positions that I had practiced.
What were you feeling?
Excited, grateful. There was pain that I was not prepared quite for. I really thought I was going to be able to meditate my way out of that.
Did you remember if the pain was in the front, in the back?
Yeah, it was mostly in the front. It was mostly like a period cramp. It wasn't anything worse than I'd ever felt in a bad period. For some reason, I didn't realize it was going to be that painful that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it made me feel really vulnerable. And so we hustled into the hotel room, walking through very fancy hotel lobby in labor has to be done almost like a ninja, right? You have to time it between contractions so that you can walk straight faced through that lobby and get into that elevator before you have to start breathing, right? So there's some finesse in the technique there. Got up to the room and I started trying all these positions. Like hands and knees, like leaning over, like...
And now it's just you and your husband.
Yeah.
And your unborn baby.
Yeah, yep. Now it's just the three of us. I'm trying all these different positions thinking, oh, you know, I thought I would really like squatting. I didn't like that. Like nothing really felt good or felt even like I could be there for very long.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to get in the shower or in the bathtub and try some positions in there. I tried sitting. I hated that. Tried on my knees. I hated that. I tried on all fours. I hated that.
Did the water feel good or bad?
The water was soothing. As an emotional thing, but it didn't do anything for the pain.
Was it a bigger tub that you can submerge
in? It was a huge tub.
Oh, yeah,
it was a big tub. That was part of the requirements of any of the
for
hotels
the hotel?
On the list.
That's
yeah.
Nice.
So I stood up, and standing felt good.
Okay.
So I stood up, and the shower water hit me in the legs, and I stood up, and I labored. My husband supported me during each contraction so I wouldn't slip, and I stood there for hours.
Wow, that's draining.
It was, but it was the only place that felt okay. So we just kind of rolled with it, and the time blurred by, and we got to the wee hours of the morning. My midwife arrived. She set up. She checked me. I was at 7.
Oh, wow. Do you remember around what time that was?
Oh, maybe somewhere between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m.
Okay. So about 6 hours of labor on your own.
Yeah.
Before she got there.
Yeah.
Did she check you right when she got there?
She got there. She got into the groove with us. She listened to the baby. She, you know, checked in with me. She kind of took a moment to assimilate with our rhythm before mm-hmm. we broke out of the bathtub and went ahead and checked.
And when she checked, did you have a number in mind? Like, I think
they
might be.
They didn't tell me.
Yeah.
My husband and she didn't tell me how far along I was. So I know that after the fact.
Oh.
I didn't know how far along I was in that moment.
They didn't tell you.
Yeah, I probably should have demanded to be told, but I don't know if it would have helped or not.
Mm-hmm.
They said I was pretty far along, and we started talking about where I was going to push the baby out.
Okay.
We thought this was going to progress here in the next couple hours. It was
well, pretty far along, even though they don't tell you a number.
Yeah.
That must sound nice.
Yeah, I was really happy. I'd been up all night, so I was a little bit sleepy.
Mm-hmm. And standing.
And I'd been standing, so the bottoms of my feet hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
My legs
are sore.
Thank
just
you.
Hearing you talk about
yeah.
like standing for that long.
Yeah.
In that space.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we got ready for the next stage. And as we started getting ready for the next stage, the sun came up and I stalled. My contractions slowed way, way down. And we tried some kind of situations where I could rest on all fours and try to maybe sleep between contractions because now they were far apart.
Mm-hmm.
And we ordered breakfast. We checked again.
Were you hungry?
No, I was kind of nauseous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
I knew I needed to eat.
Because you were farther along, so.
Yeah, I knew I needed to eat probably, but I didn't, nothing sounded good.
Did you eat?
I forced half a bagel down.
Did it stay down?
Yep.
Oh, that's
yep.
nice.
It stayed down. So, you know, we checked again, no progress.
Uh-huh.
We stomped, we squatted, we started doing, because, you know, now I have plenty of time to recover between the contractions. They're still painful, but now I have time to do you know, really prepare for whatever the position is going to be. And
but no sleep? I mean, was that if your body was took a little break, you don't want to?
Well, yeah, we tried. We did. I did some all fours resting on the bed and that sort of thing. But each contraction was so strong, it would wake me right up.
Mm-hmm.
So there just wasn't a lot of sleep to be had. There were micro naps to be had.
Okay. There's something.
I took it. I took it.
And not being standing.
Yeah, not being standing. Yeah, although I think the standing worked for me in a lot of ways.
Just something that rest from standing.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been good to figure out somewhere to be to rest my legs a little bit. But so then, you know, I squatted, I did these funny positions. My midwife was having me like press my back into the wall and kind of do like a shimmy. And we did a lay on the bed on your side and roll, kind of like that position in the Bradley book. Can't remember what it's called, but we tried that one. All the positions, the contractions were very painful, but they were, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes apart. I had lots of time in between.
So they really spaced out.
Yeah, they really spaced
painful
out.
In the same place?
Painful in the same place.
Okay.
Yep. Pretty much handleable, but I mean, I didn't love it. I wasn't injured. Like, I was still grateful for them, though.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ordered lunch.
Next meal.
Next meal. Room service, right?
Room service.
Yeah. And I remember having to, like, quietly groan through my contractions because I didn't want room service to think something bad was happening in the room as they delivered the food.
Yeah, I mean, the hotel we go to, they know that we do that.
Oh, yeah, I was so self-conscious about it.
The first couple of times I went, I felt the same way, sort of like, got to hide this, got to be stealth about it. But by the fourth or fifth time that I walked in there, you know, holding the big ball and there's a very pregnant woman panting and out of breath, like either I'm supporting women in labor or we have a bigger problem.
Right.
So they knew. Like one time he just told me, yeah, we know you're up there laboring. And then also they see us leave at 2:30 in the morning randomly.
Right.
Sometimes with all our stuff and never come back. So
right. That makes sense.
They figured it out. I'm like, yeah. Good job, Captain.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. So sometime after lunch, I'm not entirely sure when, my midwife and my husband were resting and I went into the bathroom and I got the Godzilla of all contractions.
Ooh.
And
Godzilla in what way? Was it long? Was it stronger? Was it in a different
place?
It was
everywhere. It was a back labor contraction.
Your first?
My first one. And I shrieked. It startled me. And then my husband came running in thinking something bad had happened. Mm. And I was startled by the sound I'd made. And
oh, really?
And then said, it was my back, my back, my back. And it was such a zinging pain that went from the lower part of my back all the way up to my shoulder blades and all the way down
oh,
to
wow.
my knees. And it was a spasm, like the whole backside of me contracted with the contraction. But after the contraction passed, it stayed in spasm.
Oh, no, that's the worst.
And so.
So no relief between the contractions now.
There was very small relief between uh-huh. the contractions because this spasm was so long.
Uh-huh.
So there was sort of a refocusing then. And my husband was like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, but. Oh my goodness, what are we going to do? I'm not, like, that was intense. I'm not going to be able to do that for another 24 hours. Like, I haven't progressed still. We did another check right before that, and I still hadn't
still
progressed.
Seven
I was
centimeters?
Still 7 centimeters.
Do you know what time it was now?
Sometime after lunch.
Okay, so like.
Yeah, you know, two.
Two, so.
We'll make it up, two.
Sort of 12 hours after your midwife got there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know. My husband was like, okay, well, let's not worry about how long you're going to do this. Let's just worry about the next hour.
Fair enough.
So we wrapped the belly up and got dressed and climbed the stairs at the hotel and went to the rooftop and did laps around the roof and then came back down.
Were the contractions you were having during that
they
similar
started getting
to
a little bit closer together, maybe?
Were they, but now always in your back too?
Every contraction. Every contraction.
But not like Godzilla, just like.
Every contraction was like Godzilla.
Godzilla, really? Wow.
Everyone. So
ouch.
What started to happen over the course of the next hour and then 2 hours as we took it 1 hour at a time is I moved from being grateful for the contraction to working through the pain to dreading the contraction and rubbing my back. Like, I would rub my sides and my husband would be rubbing my back. So I'd have four hands on me every contraction trying to rub my back and stop the spasms. And nothing was helping.
Was this when I started talking with your midwife?
I think she teched in with you when I was just stalled. Mm-hmm. And then we started seeing maybe a greater need. I don't actually know when she was contacting you.
I had just retired from going to birth.
I know.
I was not on call anymore. My heart was deeply with you because I'd been with you since early in your pregnancy.
Yeah.
On your whole journey as your birth plan unfolded. And when she said back labor and stall, I was like, I want to be there so badly to help you. And I just had patience.
I know.
I was in the office like 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon with patience until 7.
In hindsight, I should have just gotten dressed in the morning after breakfast and
come over.
The minute it looked like I was just stalling before the back labor hit, I probably should have just come to see you.
Hindsight is helpful.
Right.
But I was, you know, and I also, I was like, and at some point, I think this was your birth, she was on the phone, and then I heard like a woman in labor in the background. And she's like, you don't have to come if you don't want to. And then all of a sudden, I was like, ah! I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go out for pizza and a salad.
It was definitely one of those very strange things. And we were starting to try to develop a plan on how to manage through this. And the pain... now it's 5 p.m., right? And so we've been doing back labor for a couple hours. I've made it a couple hours, and it's not getting better. It's getting worse. I've been rubbing my own back so hard during each one of these contractions that my skin is now peeling.
Ooh.
And...
So you can't even do it, really.
I can't even... I'm doing it anyway.
Another problem.
Yep, I'm doing it anyway. I'm just like, pour the oil on. I'm doing it. And... we were kind of stuck. We all kind of felt stuck. And we were coming up with all these plans on, you know, bringing in another doula to help take some pressure off my husband. Everybody was exhausted. And, you know, my midwife and my husband were really supportive in trying to keep us in this hotel birth because both of them knew I really didn't want to go to Plan B, didn't want to go to the hospital. But I had this moment where my body hit one more of those back labor contractions and I slipped into fight or flight. And I just felt my body go really rigid and my mind went to all of these very dark and scary places that had to do with what your body does in fight or flight, which is life or death feelings and hopeless feelings. And I realized I wasn't in the headspace I wanted to be in order to have a different experience. That this was going to be, even if I stayed in this hotel and gritted through 10 more hours of back labor, that when the baby finally came out, I was not going to be okay. I was going to have another negative experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted more than anything to have a different experience this time. Hotel labor was what I thought was going to get me there. But in this moment, I realized, I was like, this isn't going to get me there now. We're going to have to change the game. We're going to have to shift this and get out of this and stop this pain so that I can relax.
And our listeners can't see you.
Mm-hmm.
And even they can see you, they can't feel you. You are very strong. Like you're an athlete. You've been an athlete your whole life. And so your body's very, very strong. You have very strong muscles. So when you go into fight or flight, that's a big, strong response. It's all of those very strong muscles tightening up and trying to protect you from something, mm-hmm. which in this case is your baby coming.
Right, which is the opposite of what we need to happen.
Your body is fighting your baby from mm-hmm. coming down.
Yeah.
And that can't feel good either physically or emotionally, and together must feel really
bad. What I am happy about is I think I recognized it pretty quick. Mm-hmm. I went, oh, we are no longer in just dealing with the pain, working it out, la-la land, pregnancy land. We are now in fight or flight, and I need to not be here.
Yeah, and sometimes that's described as the negative emotional response,
mm-hmm.
which is different than pain. That's like sort of the beginning of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's one thing to sort of plow through pain because you know it's pain for a good cause, but suffering is a different story.
Right. So now, you know, and we've been doing this for 24 hours now.
Now it's 8 o'clock-ish.
Yep. And so, well, it's 5 o'clock when I make the choice. and then the gathering up of things and the getting to the hospital. And by the time I got to the hospital, they get me through very quickly. They were lovely.
Taking you in.
Taking me in, doing the
intake
papers.
Totally different hospital than your
Totally different hospital than the first time. They get me through everything really quickly. We get that epidural in. I start with a walking epidural. And I was, you know, I've heard these stories where women say, I need the epidural, and it takes them like 5 hours to get. Mm-hmm. This took very, very little time. We were up and at them quickly.
They have a couple of people at the hospital you went to, a couple of anesthesiologists on the L&D floor at all times.
Yeah. Yeah. I was grateful. I was really grateful. And I felt it work its way down my back and my body relaxed. And I was like, oh my gosh, I think I'm going to be okay. And it was like suddenly I was no longer in this very dark place. I was going to be okay. And then we laid down on the bed and I was like, okay, we're going to get a little rest here. My husband and midwife are standing there talking to me. And I make this joke. I go, oh, you guys, the drugs just hit my vagina. And both my midwife and my husband start laughing and I start laughing. And I go, oh, wait, you guys, something just came out.
What?
Something big just came out. You need to check. And they were like, no, you're feeling the drugs. I was like, no. No, really, you need to come check.
Okay. Why don't we take a break?
Okay.
And I can't wait to hear what happens next. Don't go away. We're going to be right back to hear the rest of Marissa's story on the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, it's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and use your code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby. Not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. We're back with Marissa, who's sharing her experience with her planned hotel VBAC that just moved to the hospital. And shortly after you get there, they move you through quickly. You get an epidural. By the way, what does that feel like to you?
I could literally feel it moving through my veins.
The mechanical. A lot of people are afraid of what it feels like to have the needle go into you and things like that.
I didn't love that part. It kind of is like a poke or a sting. But it's not any worse than a bee sting.
Okay. And compared to the Godzilla of all contractions that you've been having.
I was okay with it.
The way you say it is like, it was a poke.
It
seems like it wasn't a big deal compared to other things at the time.
No, the biggest worry the whole time for me was they need to get this poke done between contractions.
Right.
Because if I have a contraction while they're trying to poke me, this is going to get awkward fast or dangerous, possibly. Like, they're gonna have a needle in my back and I'm gonna have to not rub my back or not move
and, so that they don't end up in the wrong
right
place.
And that these contractions are pretty excruciating, so
that always when I see it happen, it's like the timing is so important.
The timing was really important.
So soon after you got the epidural placed, you feel the numbness coming down your body all the way down into...
Yeah, all the way down into my nether regions. And I was so happy. And then something came out from between my legs. Like, I laid down on my side and not a small item passed.
Was it?
I was afraid it was my baby. I was like, you guys, something came out. What is it? It's not crying, so it's not a baby. But, like, what just came out? And they came over and looked, and my entire bag of waters intact came out.
What? The whole bag?
The whole bag. The whole bag.
Just like a balloon? A water balloon?
It looked like a water balloon. Yep.
You just saw it laying there?
I mean, I couldn't see it because I was up high and my belly was in the way. You know, my head is up high, my eyes are up high, and I'm laying down. But yeah, I have pictures. My husband took a picture and showed it to me.
Of a water balloon. Not just you gave birth to a water balloon.
I gave birth to a water balloon.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
It is different than your first birth.
Yes, very different. Very so different. Far. And, you know, like, I didn't even know that was a possibility. I thought it came out in the afterbirth. I had no idea that there was a chance it would come out all intact in the
I've
in
never
the
seen that happen. I've been to a lot of births.
Yeah, it was a little weird. It's a little weird.
I want to see those pictures.
I'll send you those pictures. They're a little strange looking. So, of course, then the nurse went and got a couple second opinions on what to do about this thing because there was still a couple little pieces of it attached. And so should they pull it out or should they leave it there? And they decided to let it finish its rupture on its own and come out the rest of the way on its own. So it got to lay there between my legs for an hour.
Oh, really? That's so unusual.
Yeah, it was weird. So the whole point was to sleep, or at least that's what I thought, was to get this epidural, sleep, relax, and then, you know, push the baby out. My OB came in with a joke. He's so funny. He's a very comical guy.
I love doing births with him.
Yes. And he came in. He made some wise-ass comment. And... And then he said, okay, so here's the deal. I'm going to go home, have dinner with my kids, and then I'm going to come back, and you're going to be fully dilated, and you're going to do, like, one push, and this baby's going to come out. And I was like, you know what? I locked on to the plan. I needed a plan. That was a plan.
You're a planner.
That was exactly the plan I wanted. So I believed him, and that was how it was going to be. And I didn't question it after that. So he took off, and I tried to sleep. But the contractions in the walking epidural, I could still feel them strong enough that I couldn't sleep.
So we have a whole episode about medical pain relief options with the head of obstetrics at the hospital you were at. His name is Dr. Mark Zukowski. And he kind of explains how a walking epidural – normally your epidural has two drugs in there. There's an anesthetic and an analgesic. The analgesic is the pain blocker, and the anesthetic blocks other types of sensation. So in the walking epidural, they give you – analgesic, but not as much. Mm-hmm. So you still feel some of the intensity, but not all of it. Mm-hmm. And either very little or no anesthetic. So you can still feel other sensations like pressure, but you can also feel the floor against your feet and you can kind of walk around and move if your legs don't get too jello-like. Mm-hmm. So you started with that. Any point you need to convert, they just put the rest of the medication and there you go, totally numb.
Right.
On that one, were you able to feel that you were having contractions?
On the walking one, I was able to feel that I was having contractions.
Were you feeling it not Godzilla-like anymore?
There was very little pain.
Okay.
But I still had to breathe through them.
Okay. So you couldn't just sleep through them.
So I couldn't sleep. And
they still on your back?
They were no longer in my back.
Okay. Yeah. Had the baby – do you know when you got in, was the baby positioned posterior against your back?
It was not posterior,
okay,
as far as we know,
you still had
ever.
Back labor. Okay.
Yeah.
Which happens.
Yeah. As far as we know, he was never posterior. I think he was well positioned most of the time, but maybe tilted a little forward. Who knows? I don't really know that part. But I do know that for some reason I had convinced myself that I needed to sleep. And I wish that I had not. It's the only regret I have is that I wish I had not thought I needed to sleep, because in not being able to sleep with the walking epidural, I went ahead and had them bump me up.
To the full epidural. So that you could sleep?
So that I could sleep.
Because you thought you needed to sleep.
Because
you've been up for over 24 hours.
Yeah. I mean, I was up the full day and then almost a full 24 hours past that. So we're talking 36, 40 hours of awakeness now.
And not just awakeness, but, you know, intense labor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought.
I would have thought you might have benefited from sleep.
Yeah. Right?
No, did they check your cervix before giving you the epidural?
They did. I was at an 8.
Okay, so you had moved.
I had.
The glass was 8 centimeters full.
Yes, 8 centimeters full. So I was relieved that I only had a little bit to go.
When you went from the hotel to the hospital, mm-hmm. was there any part of your mind, and you were in a darker place anyway, but was there any part of your mind that felt like this is going to be another cesarean?
Yeah. I was fully prepared that this could end not in just a cesarean like I had last time, but this could be an emergency cesarean where they might even have to knock me out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was...
Which is very rare.
But I was, you know, I was emotionally prepared that this could be the beginning of a very sad, failed VBAC story.
Oh, plan
you know?
ZZ.
ZZ, right? Yeah, I was very aware that that could happen. And there wasn't a small amount of me that had a fight ready for that, for anything that came. But then I also had my husband and my midwife there with me who made me feel like... So I had people who had my back, and my OB was on board.
I should have had your back.
Hmm?
I should have had your back.
You had my back.
I wasn't there for your back.
Well, I don't know that anybody could have fixed that.
No, I know. But when you said had my back, it made me feel like I'm the back guy.
You're a back guy. That's true.
So when you got there and you were 8, did that sort of take some of that away? Like, okay, I'm still progressing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when your doctor said, I'm just going to come back and you push this baby out.
Yeah.
It was pretty convincing.
I was in a totally different headspace. I was just like, once the pain stopped being in my back and I knew that I was progressing, I knew the baby was probably, like, I decided that the baby was going to come soon now. I went from one end of the spectrum to the other emotionally, just as soon as the back labor was no longer part of the equation.
Nice. So when you convert to the full epidural, then do you feel nothing?
No, I can still feel contractions, but I can sleep through them.
Okay. Did you sleep?
So I slept for 30 minutes, but then...
Ooh.
But this is the part where I regret going up to the next level of epidural, because as time went on, it got stronger and stronger and stronger. I lost all feeling.
Uh-huh.
I could feel when I was having a contraction barely, in just minor muscle twinges, but really I couldn't feel very much at all. And I couldn't feel my toes, couldn't feel my ankles, I couldn't feel my knees, I couldn't feel my legs.
Did that bother you?
It really bothered
me.
Okay. And so I called, you know, and the nurses, every contraction, the monitors would go off because they would lose the baby's heart rate. They couldn't find it with the monitors. And so then the nurses would come in and bug me and reposition me.
Oh,
so I never got to sleep anyway.
Not a sound sleep.
Yep. So there's never any really good sleep to be had. And I lost feeling, which kind of bothered me. I wanted to feel it still.
Mm-hmm.
So I had them. I bugged them. Gosh, those poor people. Now I wanted it turned down. First I want it turned up. Now I want it turned down. They turned it down twice, and I never regained feeling.
Oh, really?
So that's the only thing, you know, if I had to do over again, given the same set of cards, the only choice I'd make differently.
You'd stick with the walking.
I'd stick with the walking. Yeah.
So, okay. What happens next?
So next, a resident comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and maybe a little wet behind the ears.
Just to check on you?
Yeah, he just wants to come in and see how it's going. And he asks us some questions. We tell him kind of what our story's been like up until this point. And he hears that I've been 7 centimeters for 12 plus hours.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts talking about failure to progress and, you know, what interventions we may not need to consider next.
Really?
And
Is he the first person to mention
that? He's the first person to mention that to me.
Mm-hmm. Though he didn't check you again.
Not yet. And he's not, it's not that I'm not aware of all those things. I just don't believe in them. And like failure to progress, I think is unless the baby's in distress, I think we just keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least for me, if the baby's fine, I'm going to just keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I can. So at this point now, I haven't had sleep. I just got peace and relief. And I turn to this young man, oh, this poor young man. And I look him straight in the eyes and I say, look, I am not having that conversation with you. I will have that conversation with my OB and no one else. And it was like, period, end of story. And I just stood there and watched him. And he was like, okay, I'll talk to your OB about it then. I was like, thank you very much.
Message received. You've got mail.
Yes, yes. So he left the room, maybe skittering. And my husband and I traded a look, though, because we both were worried that this was going to be like, you know, this is the path now that starts to unfold where we maybe we haven't progressed. We don't even know. We've only been there 2 hours under the epidural or so at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's interesting that your doctor didn't mention anything about that, said, I'm going to go home and have dinner and come back and we'll push this baby out. And then a resident came in without any more data and just started going down that road with you.
He was just really eager, I think, to talk the talk and do his job. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably all it was. And, you know, maybe it was really good that he had me for a birth. Maybe he'll know better next time.
He's there to learn.
Yeah. So they came back an hour later and checked.
Who's that?
The resident.
Okay.
The resident came back with a nurse and checked me an hour later, and I was complete.
Oh. First of all, had he talked to your doctor at all?
I don't know. He didn't mention it.
Okay. But he also didn't mention failure to progress.
He didn't mention that again, no. And then I think he was relieved, too.
That
I was complete.
10 centimeters.
Okay. Yep. We did a practice push.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, okay, well, I'm going to go call your doctor. And then he went to adjust something on the bed, so he was a little bit lower than my eye level. And I looked down at him. I said, I am so glad that I'm complete, because let me tell you, failure to progress are fighting words. And he kind of – I just wanted him to know that, because, you know, lots of women are going to have that sort of situation, and it's good for them to learn, to, like, as residents, to be a little bit gentler.
It's hard balance for him. I think sometimes, you know – whether it's hospital staff, the people around you that are there to support you, never want you to be taken by surprise if you end up going down a more interventive path.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you need time to process that or benefit from time to process it. So how it's presented makes a huge difference. But, you know, it's delicate and everybody's just different. So some people would want to know that at that point. Or for you, it just sounds like you just took it as like motivation to be like, all right, I'm going to squeeze off those last 2 centimeters.
Right. Well, right. And well, it's not like I had never heard of failure to progress, or I was totally unaware of what the category I probably was finding myself in. But I also had built a relationship with my OB for this reason, so that I wasn't going to come in and have a complete stranger come in and try to tell me how this was going to go.
Right. You put a lot of effort into picking your obstetrician.
Yeah.
And you picked an obstetrician who's very hands-off unless it's time to be hands-on, in a way that residents can't, because they don't have enough experience to know when to jump into action and when they can leave things alone.
Yeah. So, and he was very sweet, and he actually ended up being the one front and center delivering my baby.
You're a resident?
My resident.
Yeah.
My cute little resident guy. So my OB arrived, and with my husband on one side and my midwife on the other, the resident front and center and the OB right over his shoulder, we did our first round of pushing. And they...
What was it like?
Well, I couldn't feel anything.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Oh, boy.
Which was frustrating for me because I'd really wanted to feel that.
I know you wanted to, yeah.
But I pushed with all my might because they were saying, push, 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 push. So I was pushing. Oh, boy. I was using every muscle I could find to feel to push. And everybody seemed to be really excited after that first round of pushing, and I was feeling really proud, like beating my chest, like, yeah, I did it. And then I looked over at my midwife, and she kind of gave me this facial cue to remind me that we had talked about relaxing in the pushing stage and breathing the baby out and letting the contraction do a lot of the work to avoid tearing. And so we got ready for our next round of pushing, and everybody ramped their yelling up, push, 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 push. And I looked over at my midwife and I pushed really hard for a count of 1, 2, and then I kept my push face on and I relaxed every muscle I could find and let the contraction do the work.
You did fake pushing?
I did fake pushing.
But you don't want to just tell people, hey, I'm going to do my relaxy push?
No. It was just, you know.
Just between you and the midwife.
Just between me and her in that moment. Now everybody who's ever listened to this. Right? So we did 2 more rounds like that. And then, so 3 rounds total of pushing. And I turned and I looked at my husband. God, I wish I'd had a video camera or audio tape going at that moment because I made a joke. And it was funny. And the nurse and my husband laughed. And I'm not that funny of a person.
Yeah.
And they laughed. And then I laughed. And then there was a commotion. And the baby was out.
Whoa.
No contraction.
Wait,
just a laugh.
You laughed your baby out?
I laughed my baby out.
That's a fun way to get your
baby out.
That's
a fun way to get your baby out.
That wasn't even on the birth plan.
It wasn't on the birth plan. Nope, it wasn't.
Wow.
It wasn't on the birth plan. There was a commotion down there. Suddenly, they're handing me my baby, and it was sort of like, whoa, okay, we're done.
And you didn't feel it.
No, I didn't feel
it. But you must have immediately seen.
I saw that. I saw my baby, and it was wonderful, and he was not small. I could tell when he was on my chest. My first baby was 7 pounds, 2 ounces. He was not that size.
Okay. But he hadn't been measured yet.
He hadn't been measured yet. I didn't
felt
know.
Like he was, but did anybody say, whoa, that's a big baby?
Or no, nobody said anything.
No comments.
I had
didn't get stuck at all. I mean, you just laughed him out.
Yeah, I laughed him out. There he was.
Was you it know? Surreal to have him on your chest?
It was.
And have him come out of you that way?
It was really surreal. It was sort of amazing. I don't even have words. I did it. I thought about it and I was like, oh my gosh, I did it. There he is. Wow. And then I just honestly got lost in the moment and was in that moment looking into his eyes, kind of like the same way I was with my first, where the commotion of what was going around in the room kind of faded away and I was right there with him. And then I had to sort of come out of that moment to remind my resident that I wanted my placenta to deliver itself.
Instead of
pulling on it
and helping it
come out. I didn't want any help. And to remind him, too, that I didn't want any Pitocin, that unless I looked like I was hemorrhaging, I didn't want any. And then I went back to my little blissful moment, you know, popped my head up. Reminded, sent a couple of reminders out there, and then back to baby. My husband got to cut the cord.
Aww.
It was pretty cool, and we just got to kind of sit there and bask in the glow of this.
You were
beautiful
so
child.
Hard for that.
Yeah.
From even before you got pregnant the second time.
Mm-hmm.
You worked so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great, and I have to say that the hospital we were at. They really did everything right in the way that the last experience I had nurses that just were not in agreement with me and it was just constantly butting heads. All of the labor nurses, the postpartum nurses, all of them were so, so wonderful. And it really makes a huge difference. You know, you see your OB just a little bit. But those nurses make a huge difference.
Yeah, they're there with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of telling that one of your least favorite parts of your birth is that nobody recorded the joke that you told.
Well, it's the joke that got him out.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. And it's a joke.
Yeah.
Nobody remembers? Maybe
nobody
it'll come
remembers.
Back. Maybe we do EMDR with the midwife or something.
Yeah.
Get it back.
Know. We'll see.
I'm so curious now.
Me too. Me too. It must have been good. I don't know. So
how big was he?
9 pounds, 4 ounces.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a healthy little bugger.
He's a healthy little bugger. Yep. He was not a small baby.
Did you have tearing?
I had a really small first degree tear that probably didn't need a stitch, but because I also have a 3-year-old, we decided to go ahead and have a single stitch just to help me along.
Mm-hmm. With the recovery, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
How was recovery?
Recovery was interesting. So much easier emotionally and physically than it was with the C-section in that I could stand up on my own. I could carry the baby. I could be involved emotionally because, you know, I'm really reactive to pain meds and so I didn't have to be on any. So that was...
Nothing?
I took a little ibuprofen.
Wow. I think I took more than that after my first child was born. Yeah. By the way, talking about laughing a baby out.
Yeah.
Our first was about 42 hours. Our second was only 2. From the time we got to the hospital, it was like 20 minutes.
Wow.
Mostly navigating hallways and elevators. And we got into the room and And the first room, they saw she was, like, close. And they just said, let's bring her into the first room. And for I don't know exactly why. Maybe the other rooms were full. It was an operating room. And as people were going in, they were giving everybody this little scrubby jumpsuit. They said, because we're going to be in an operating room, you got to wear these scrubs. Now, our doula is tiny. She went in, just zip it up. Everybody who went in, they just zip it up. And then they give me this little one-piece disposable scrub suit. And like, here, zip it up and come on in. But I'm sort of, even though it says one size fits all, I think it meant to say one size fit many. But not all. I'm a big guy. And I was even bigger then. I was like, I don't think this is going to fit. She's like, it's one size fits all. And it's a hospital. Actually, it's where you had your first baby. Mm-hmm. And so you don't know the doctor. It's just whoever's there. And I'm trying to like zip it up and it just shreds into a million pieces.
Oh, no.
So I like tap open the door. I'm like, I don't want to miss the birth, but that thing doesn't fit. She's like, it's one size fits all. And then I threw in like the confetti pieces that it turned in. So the resident came out, and she was sort of helpful. She opened up this cabinet. She's like, here, just put on these. And she took out, like, a surgical cap and two little booties and this thick pink nursing nightgown.
Oh, nice.
And she says, just put this on. I'm like, why the getup? She's like, it's an operating room. It's a sterile environment. I'm like, but we're not doing surgery. Like, my wife's not in a getup like this. And she's like, yeah, it's protocol. Just put it on. So I put it on, and there's, like, slits over my man boobs. Mm-hmm. I'm like, don't the bacteria know there's little holes here that I can get in on? And long story short, I put on my thick pink nursing nightgown, and then I go to put on the booty over my giant size 14 wide shoe, and it won't fit. I'm like, I'm going to miss my stupid birth over this.
So my goodness.
I'm like, do you guys have any pink slippers to go with my nightgown? Because the booty's not going to fit. And she's like, just stretch it and pull. I'm like, it's not going to work. And then I realized the hat and the booty are very similar, so maybe the hat's a little bigger. And it did. It fit my shoe. So I opened the cabinet where she got to cut another hat for my other shoe. And I went to get one more hat for my head, but they had no more hats left. So my only choice was to put the booty on my head. And when I finally had it all done, I was so happy and proud of myself. I pushed open the door and kind of ran in there.
Yeah.
And literally slid like you're sliding into home plate and fell down on the floor.
Oh, God.
And because apparently the hat does not have tread on the bottom.
Oh, no.
For the highly polished floor in the operating room. And the booties do, but the booty's on my head.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the way down, I just instinctively reached for the closest thing, which was this big tray full of surgical tubes that just came all crashing down with
mm-hmm.
me. Everybody's looking at me like, are you okay? Mm-hmm. Even though my wife is having a big contraction on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Physically, I was fine. Emotionally, I was very, very bruised. And I kind of crawled over on my hands and knees to get next to her, got up, looked at her, and her eyes were closed. And I'm like, honey, you're doing amazing. I'm so proud of you. You know, you're so strong. And she opened up her eyes just to, like, acknowledge that I exist. And when she saw me wearing that thick pink nursing nightgown with a booty on my head and two hats on my feet, she laughed so hard. Baby Dina literally almost knocked over the doctor on the way out. You know, so fast. And of course, we do actually have a picture of that.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think if I can recommend it, laughing the baby out is definitely the way to go.
It's the way to go, yeah.
Yep. It started, you know, the I can say we kind of started and ended this labor with laughter in that
that's
we
so beautiful.
Watched the comedy show that day right before going into active labor and then laughed at the end. So
amazing.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for you. I know. Did you find the experience therapeutic?
I found it empowering in that I feel like there, if I ever have another baby, and the jury's still out on that,
mm-hmm.
I'm only 6 weeks
postpartum.
I mean, yeah, I need to catch up on some sleep before we make that decision. But I don't think there's anything that could scare me at this point.
Do you know what you would plan?
What kind of birth?
Yeah.
I think my plan would probably be pretty similar to what I had this time. It worked. That plan worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if we went to plan B, that plan B was in place.
I always say a birth plan is a flow chart.
Yeah.
It has a page one. This is if everything goes exactly according to plan, this is how I'd like it to be. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, if this happens, we'll go here. And if this happens, we'll
yeah.
go there.
Yeah.
And with that kind of fluid openness and forethought, I think you can't go wrong. Like when you end up in a cesarean, if that was part of your plan, then you followed your plan all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
You followed your plan. Your plan didn't fail.
Mm-hmm. You know? I think the other thing it did for me is have a sort of newfound appreciation for Western medicine in a way that I didn't have before. That epidural was absolutely necessary to the process and the experience that I wanted to have. And if you had asked me months before having the baby if an epidural was going to be important to the experience I wanted to have, I probably would have told you the epidural was not part of the experience I wanted to have. So I think it gives me a more openness and fluid perspective on the world of medicine.
Yeah. I think that's really important also for listeners to hear. Like, the epidural is not the bad guy.
Yeah, it was a wonderful experience, and I had wonderful people like you helping me along the way.
Well, it was a real honor. I think all of those interventions are great. The fact that we have them available to us is magic. It's just, I think, when we overuse them or push them on people who don't want them and don't need them, that we sometimes end up doing more harm than good. And so I'm so glad in your case that you were able to pre-think through your birth plan and go at the time that you felt you needed to for your plan B and C, and that the epidural was there for you and helped you and have a great experience.
Yeah.
I'm so deeply grateful for you to you for sharing your story, your personal story with us. And I know that people listening will have been through similar stories and relate to you. And people listening will probably be in the middle of a pregnancy planning something similar. I don't know if it'll be a hotel VBAC.
Hey, you know.
I'll say this. If you're listening at home and you have a hotel VBAC, share it with us at info@informedpregnancy.com. Thanks so much for listening. Go to our website and check out our blog, documentaries, and YouTube series at informedpregnancy.com.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.